भक्त्या वेश्य मनो यस्मिन्
वाचायान्नामकीर्तयामि
त्यजन् कलेवरं योगी मुच्यते
कामकर्मभिः.
The personality of Godhead, who appears in the mind of the devotee by attentive devotion and meditation, and by the chanting of the holy name, releases the devotee from the bondage of fruitive activity at the time of his quitting the material body. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Yoga means concentration of the mind detached from all other subject matter. And actually such concentration is samadhi, or sent engagement in the service of the Lord. And one who concentrates his attention in that matter is called a yogi. Such a yogi, devotee of the Lord, engages himself 24 hours daily in the service of the Lord, so that his whole attention is engrossed with the thoughts of the Lord in ninefold devotional service, namely hearing, chanting, remembering, worshiping, praying, becoming a voluntary servant, carrying out orders, establishing a friendly relationship, or offering all that one may possess in the service of the Lord. By such practice of yoga, or linking up in the service of the Lord, one is recognized by the Lord himself, as it is explained in the Bhagavad Gita concerning the highest perfectional stage of samadhi. The Lord calls such a rare devotee the best amongst all the yogis. Such a perfect yogi is enabled by the divine grace of the Lord to concentrate his mind upon the Lord with a perfect sense of consciousness, and thus by chanting his holy name before quitting the body, the yogi is at once transferred by the internal energy of the Lord to one of the eternal planets, where there is no question of material life and its concomitant factors. In material existence, a living being has to endure the material conditions of threefold miseries, life after life, according to his fruitive work. Such material life is produced by material desires only. Devotional service to the Lord does not kill the natural desires of the living entity, but they are applied in the right cause of devotional service. This qualifies the desire to be transferred to the spiritual sky. General Bhishma Dev is referring to a particular type of yoga called Bhakti Yoga, and he was fortunate enough to have the Lord directly in his presence before he quitted his material body. He therefore desired that the Lord stay before his view in the following verses. We are reading this evening from the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is narrating the glorious pastime of Lord Krishna bestowing his most intimate mercy upon his devotee, Bhishma Dev, at the time of his departure from this material world. Herein it is explained that there was a great battle on the field of Kurukshetra. Herein, many millions and millions of soldiers from all over this earth were killed. At the end, the Pandavas and just a few others survived. And Krishna brought them back to Hastinapur, which was at that time the capital, not only of India, but of all the world. Yudhisthira Maharaj was most ceremoniously coronated as the emperor of all the world. After this most auspicious celebration, Krishna considered it that he had fulfilled his promise to human society. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskritam dharma samstapanaradhaya sambhavami yuge yuge. He had protected his devotees, the Pandavas. He had reestablished the principles of religion by speaking the Gita and coronating a pious devotee as the king of the world. And he had certainly been the ultimate cause of the annihilation of the burdensome miscreants who were propagating irreligion within the world. So after fulfilling his merciful mission, it was his desire to return to his own abode of Dwarka. As he was about to leave, the mother of the Pandavas, Srimati Kunti Devi, approached Lord Krishna with tears of feelings of separation from the Lord in her eyes, and with a heart full of unalloyed devotional sentiments, she offered beautiful prayers to Lord Krishna. In these prayers, she established Krishna as the supreme, all-merciful Lord of his devotees. And how the only real purpose of life is to remember Krishna. Because as soon as we forget Krishna, we are spiritually dead. Spiritual life means to understand our original spiritual nature, that we are all the eternal loving servants of Krishna in every aspect of our existence. Whether we are raising a family, whether we are doing our business or our profession, whether we are performing our sadhana, whether we are executing our social duties, whatever it may be, the reality is that it only has reality if it is done in a spirit of service to Krishna, in remembrance to Krishna. Otherwise, anything we do is only a cause of bondage. Krishna explains in the third chapter of the Gita that all work should be done as a sacrifice for the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, any work done for any other purpose is only a cause of bondage. And that bondage is the root cause of all suffering. Kunti Devi was praying, even when great calamities come, I consider it most auspicious, because in that desperate condition, I have nowhere to go except you, my Lord. And when I remember you, I no longer have to see the face of death. Queen Kunti prayed for miserable conditions, dangers and calamities, because any situation that brings us closer to the remembrance of Krishna is all auspicious. Queen Kunti prayed Please sever my attachment even to my maternal and paternal family heritage, even to my husband's line, the great line of the Kurus. Let my attachment only be to you, as the Ganges flows without obstruction to the ocean. Let my attraction be drawn only to you without being distracted to anything or anyone else. After Kunti Devi offered these beautiful prayers, Krishna blessed her. He went into the palace, and all of the queens with tears in their eyes were begging Krishna, please do not go. But Krishna had already resolved that it was time to return to Dwarka. However, as he was walking out of the palace, Maharaj Yudhisthira approached him. And Maharaj Yudhisthira's heart was full of distress. And he pleaded with Krishna, please stay for a few days more. Although Krishna is completely independent, and whatever he desires must be done, he is so favorably disposed to the humility of his devotee that he could not refuse. He remained only for the satisfaction of Maharaj Yudhisthira. Maharaj Yudhisthira was such a Vaishnava that he considered all the deaths and all the sufferings that were byproducts of the battle of Kurukshetra were all the fault of his own. That just for his greed to sit on the throne, all these people had died. Actually, Yudhisthira said, Duryodhana was doing a very fine job of administrating the kingdom. There was no reason for any change. But because of me, he and all of his brothers and all of these soldiers are killed, and all of the innocent wives and children are crying. A great person naturally sees fault in himself and is not willing to see any fault in another. Whereas a person who is cripple-minded, duratma, that person never wants to admit any fault, but is very eager to find faults in others. Yudhisthira was spotless, but he saw all spots on his own character. And so many great personalities came to try to pacify Maharaj Yudhisthira. The greatest rishis and sages came to try to relieve the anxiety in his heart. Even Vedavyas, he appeared and he personally preached to Maharaj Yudhisthira. He was in plenary expansion, a Shaktivesh avatar of the Lord, the compiler of all the Vedic literatures. But Yudhisthira Maharaja's heart could not be satisfied. And then Krishna, the master of all religion, the supreme cause of all righteousness, he personally preached to Maharaj Yudhisthira. But Maharaj Yudhisthira's anxiety did not go away. Hare Krishna. Why is this? How is this possible? Srila Prabhupada explains that Krishna is in the heart of all living beings. And it is actually according to our desire that we perceive everything by his influence. Krishna gives us a particular type of faith, a particular type of perception of everything in reciprocation to our motivations and our desires. But in this case, it was different. Krishna was giving Yudhisthira a particular consciousness according to his own sweet will. Krishna's will was that he knew that his dear devotee, Bhishma Dev, was laying on the cold and hard battlefield ground of Kurukshetra, waiting for him. Bhishma Dev had received a benediction that he would only die when it was his will to do so. And he would not die without having all of his senses and his mind fixed in the personal darshan of his supreme most beloved worshipable Lord, Sri Krishna. Krishna wanted to fulfill the desire of Bhishma Dev. At the same time, he wanted to glorify Bhishma Dev as being better than himself. Just as Krishna told Arjuna, I have already killed all these soldiers on this battlefield by my own sweet will. But I desire for you to be my instrument and gain the credit and the glory of being the conqueror of the world. Krishna is more pleased to see his devotee glorified and worshipped than in taking that worship for himself. Krishna, although he and Vedavyasa and so many others preached to Maharaj Yudhisthira, Krishna did not let that preaching influence his heart because he wanted Bhishma to gain the eternal glory. So Maharaj Yudhisthira, in his sadly broken-hearted condition, decided to go with his brothers to see the condition of all of the people laying on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Krishna arranged for a procession, and the Pandavas in beautiful golden chariots, bedecked with all sorts of jewels and auspicious emblems, dressed as the kings of the world, they came before Maharaj Yudhisthira. Krishna knew how much Bhishma Dev loved the Pandavas. How sad he was to see how they were exploited, how they were persecuted and blasphemed. It was his inner desire to see them in their rightful position as kings. Even though by the inconceivable will of Lord Krishna, he fought against them, Srila Prabhupada explains on behalf of the great acharyas that actually Bhishma Dev was simply an instrument of Krishna's will. Externally, he fought on the side of Duryodhana because it was his political obligation to do so, because Duryodhana was supporting him and maintaining him for so many years in his kingdom. But the internal and actual reason was that Krishna wanted to show the world that even if you are the greatest of all heroes, with the best intelligence, with all God-given capabilities, if you are against the side of Dharma, if you are not on the side of God and the devotees, you will be defeated. You will lose everything. Bhishmadev was quite satisfied as a great Mahajan to accept any position that could best serve the sweet will of Lord Krishna. When Bhishma saw the Pandavas decorated with all the royal ornaments, standing along with their dearmost friend Krishna, tears began to flow from his eyes in happiness. He was laying there, and from his neck to his toes, his body was completely filled with hundreds upon hundreds of arrows that pierced through the front and the back of his body into the ground. But yet, upon seeing the devotees being glorified, he was feeling great happiness. He was not crying in pain as we would be. He was crying in joy. Because a devotee's joy is to see the upliftment of others, to see the will of God being fulfilled. Such a devotee is not so concerned with his own happiness or distress. Because a devotee's body is only for the purpose of service. A devotee's mind is only for the purpose of service. And our happiness is to see that service being done in such a way that Krishna and the devotees are pleased. Then Yudhisthira Maharaj, the Pandavas, they bow down before Bhishmadev. And Krishna, who is the supremest in all opulences, the six opulences that Krishna possesses are wealth and strength, beauty, knowledge, fame, and renunciation. And part of this wonderful opulence of renunciation is, although he is the master of everyone, he loves to take the position of the servant of his own servants. Krishna considered himself in the position of the younger brother of Maharaj Yudhisthira. Because they were cousins and Yudhisthira was older in age, and Krishna honored Bhishmadev, and as Yudhisthira Maharaj bowed down to Bhishma, Krishna very humbly followed and got off his chariot and bowed his head at the lotus feet of his own devotee, Bhishmadev. Bhishmadev began to pray. How wonderful that Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, my most worshipful Lord, has appeared before me at the moment of my death. How Krishna, who is so kind to his devotees, has come before me to give me his darshan at this most important time of life, the moment of death. And in this particular verse, he is explaining how Krishna appears in the mind of the devotees if that person has attentive devotion through the chanting of the holy names. And then Bhishma Dev began to glorify Krishna in relationship to the Pandavas. That how is it? Maharaj Yudhisthira was the very son of religion personified. And he was the very embodiment of all spiritually virtuous qualities. Why did he and his brothers have to suffer? From the material point of view, it's inconceivable. Arjuna is the greatest of bowmen. Bhima is the most powerful of all fighters. How could they have lost their kingdom? Materially, it is impossible. And spiritually, Yudhisthira Maharaj had never sinned. He's completely pure in his devotion and his love for God. And Krishna, the supreme controller of all controllers, was the intimate friend, well-wisher of the Pandavas at every stage of their life. How is it, from the material or spiritual point of view, that it could be possible that they could be defeated, that they could be exploited, they could be banished? They could suffer so many terrible reversals and tragedies in their life. And how is it that Kunti Devi, who was their mother, who was such a devotee of the Lord, perfectly sinless and pure, that she had to suffer far worse than them by seeing years and years and years of their tribulation? Bhishma Dev gave the understanding that it is the power of providence. It is the influence of eternal time that within this material world everyone must suffer. But ultimately, all providence and eternal time itself is none different than Krishna. Maya dyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. Because everything is happening by the orchestrated will of God. And who can understand the will of God? Even the greatest rishis like Narada, even the greatest of the gods like Brahma and Shiva, they cannot understand the inconceivable will of eternal time. But there is one thing we can all understand, that for the devotees, even the tragedies, even the miseries, even the most apparent unfair treatment by the laws of nature and by other living beings, it is all the mercy of Krishna. It is all meant to bring us closer to Krishna. To live comfortably in this world is not a benediction. If those comforts cause us to compromise the intensity of our devotion, if the nice arrangements around us cause us to be complacent in the way we call out the holy name of the Lord, it is a curse. It is not a benediction. However, if inconceivable tragedies come into our life, even if it appears that there is no karmic cause at all, it is to be considered a benediction if it causes us to come closer to Krishna, to fix our mind in Krishna, and to helplessly cry out his holy name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. With great love, Bhishma Dev was praising the Pandavas and praising the good fortune of how they have received Krishna's mercy. And how the Pandavas remain so faithful in their devotion, whether they lost everything or whether they gained everything. In success or failure, in victory or defeat, in happiness or distress, in luxury or poverty, the Pandavas' devotion to Krishna and their faithfulness in serving him and chanting his name remained the same. And it is said that the mother teaches the daughter-in-law by teaching the daughter. Because the daughter-in-law, when she first marries and comes to the home, is like a stranger in the house. And she is prone to make so many mistakes. She does not know what is to be done and what is not to be done. And therefore, so much teaching and so much correction and so much chastisement may be required. But in order to instruct the daughter-in-law in such a way that they can understand, the mother-in-law will teach the daughter, even though the daughter already knows. She will chastise the daughter for something the daughter isn't even doing wrong, just to instruct the daughter-in-law. In the same way, Krishna teaches the world by teaching through his devotees. Arjuna did not require to hear Bhagavad Gita. He was perfect in his Krishna consciousness. But Krishna personally arranged for him to be in illusion. Krishna is the source of remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. Arjuna did not forget because of the circumstances around him. Arjuna forgot because Krishna took away his intelligence just so he could give it back to him through speaking Gita, and in the process to give it to all of us who are all like ignorant neophyte daughter-in-laws. Krishna has spoke to Arjuna just to speak to us. And Bhishma Dev was appreciating the great mercy of Krishna. And then Yudhisthira Maharaj began to reveal his own sorrows to Bhishma. Bhishma preached to him how to see the will of the Lord in all. Bhishma preached to him and explained to him what are his duties as king, and he should not be despondent by the deaths and the sorrows of the battle of Kurukshetra. He was only acting as the instrument of the Lord. After completely relieving all Yudhisthira's sorrows, something that even Vyas and Krishna could not do personally. He began to instruct Yudhisthira on the science of Krishna consciousness from so many points of view. He explained both briefly as well as very elaborately the scientific process of Varnashram Dharma, of how society is divided into social and spiritual divisions. He explained the duties of king. He explained the science of the soul. He explained the duties of all classes of men and women. The instructions of Bhishma Dev to Yudhisthira Maharaj comprise a very major part of the great epic Mahabharata. And as he just ended his teachings, the sun entered into the northern hemisphere. When Bhishma saw this auspicious time, he understood that this is the moment I've been waiting for, to give up my body. And then he focused all of his attention exclusively on the beautiful form of Krishna. At that moment, Krishna personally appeared to Bhishma Dev in his beautiful four-handed form of Narayan. Bhishma Dev, with tears of love, gazed upon the most beautiful form of the Lord. His beautiful lotus eyes and blackest complexion was standing before him. And he began to praise Krishna. How Krishna loves his devotee. How he has come to this isolated place in the middle of a cold battlefield just to be with me at the time of my death. How Krishna took the humble position of Partha Sarathi, the chariot driver of Arjuna, and he began to meditate on the wonderful pastimes that Krishna revealed to him. He meditated on the Leela when Bhishma Dev personally made a promise to Duryodhana that with these five arrows I will kill the Pandavas. But Bhishma knew that he had to make this promise. Duryodhana forced him to. But he had such faith in Krishna, he knew it was impossible for this promise to be fulfilled. So Krishna sent the Pandavas to Duryodhana in the middle of the night to his tent. And Duryodhana welcomed them with very noble mannerisms. He said, "What can I give you to serve you? You have come to my home." They said, "Give me the five arrows." So Bhishma was very pleased. The arrows were gone. But he wanted Krishna to be glorified. So he promised. He promised that I will make Krishna break his promise so that Arjuna's promise will be sustained. Krishna told Arjuna, Kaunteya pratijanihiname bhakta pranashyati. That you declared, Arjuna, that my devotee will never be vanquished. Krishna promised that I will not fight and I will not lift any sort of weapon on this battlefield. I will only serve as a charioteer. So Bhishma knew the love of Krishna for his devotee. During the battle, Bhishma fought with Arjuna. Does that mean something? And Arjuna was naturally defeated by the power of Bhishma. Arjuna was about to be killed by Bhishma. What faith Bhishma had? Do you think he could kill Arjuna? But he was on the verge of doing it, knowing that Krishna would break all of his promise to save his devotee. And sure enough, Krishna, in the supreme anger, with his eyes red like coals, he came off of the chariot and he picked up the wheel of another chariot and he came running at Bhishma to destroy him like death personified. Bhishma was meditating on this wonderful, wonderful pastime. Krishna, his beautiful, beautiful form was covered with dust raised by the hooves of the horses on the battlefield. And his beautiful black hair looked like it was covered with ashes. And as he was running toward me, there was perspiration on his forehead. And I was shooting my arrows in his body. And so lovingly, he was accepting the offerings of my arrow. And he was reciprocating with his own blood. And as Krishna was running, covered by dust, blood, and perspiration, his eyes like hot coals, with the wagon wheel in his hand, Bhishma Dev, in great ecstasy of love, offered his obeisances and surrendered at the lotus feet of Krishna. How Krishna protects and loves his devotee. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains the inconceivable nature of this pastime. That Bhishma was a warrior and he was serving Krishna according to his particular ras. And how Krishna, during that wonderful Kurukshetra war, stood with one hand holding the reins, his left hand was holding the reins of the horses, and his right hand were holding a whip. As he was the chauffeur, the driver, the charioteer for his devotee Arjuna. Bhishma remembered how Krishna loves and serves his devotees. And he began to meditate on the wonderful Rasa-lila of Vrindavan as he was laying in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. How the gopis, in separation from Krishna, due to their great love, during Rasa dance, They were searching through the forest. Where is Krishna? How Krishna personally disappeared from them just to increase their love. Krishna played on his flute, the fifth note, and attracted the gopis to leave behind everything of this world just to please Krishna, just to satisfy Krishna at Vamsivat and Bank of Jamuna. But then Krishna disappeared from them. And as they were searching for Krishna, Shyam Sundar, they were so mad with love, so intoxicated by bhakti, that they were asking the deers and the birds and the trees and the creepers, where is Shyam Sundar? Where is Sri Nandanandana? And when no one would give them a suitable reply, just to help each other remember Krishna, they began to enact the various leelas of Krishna together. One gopi started holding up Govardhan Hill. Another gopi started sucking on Putana's breast. Another gopi kicked the cart and destroyed the demon Shakatasura. Another gopi started riding on Trinavarta's shoulders and brought him down to the ground. Another gopi started stealing butter and feeding it to monkeys. In this way, the gopis were reenacting amongst each other Krishna's wonderful pastimes. Not as a dramatic performance, but as an expression of their spontaneous meditation on Krishna. And actually, this is the real purpose of friendship in this world, to help each other remember Krishna, to help each other to remain absorbed in chanting, serving, and keeping our consciousness always with Krishna. Bhishma was remembering this loving pastime. And he remembered how he personally witnessed the great Rajasuya sacrifice. How although all the greatest kings and rishis in all the world came to be present for Yudhisthira Maharaj's Rajasuya Yajna, Maharaj Yudhisthira made Krishna the worshipable object of everyone. The most important part of the Rajasuya Yajna for Maharaj Yudhisthira was to establish Krishna as the Supreme Lord. Actually, Yudhisthira Maharaj was not really concerned at all in performing these yajnas. There was no need. But he wanted everyone to understand Krishna's supreme position. So he called all. First he had to conquer the whole world. Then he had to call the whole world together. All the kings and all the emperors and all the sages. And then he performed the Agra Puja, where the greatest of all souls was to be worshipped, and that was Krishna. Bhishma Dev was remembering the wonderful, wonderful reciprocations of the love between Krishna and his devotees. That was his meditation. That is the ultimate goal of life. We do not want to become God. We don't want to become peaceful. We do not want to even become liberated. We simply want to honor, adore the wonderful reciprocations of love between Krishna and his devotees. And we want to become the servant of the servant of those loving exchanges eternally. That is the substance of the consciousness of a Vaishnava. Nadanam najanam nasundarim kavitam vajagadisha kamaye mama janmani janmanishwari bhavatad bhakti rahoi tekitvai. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu prayed, I do not want any amount of wealth. It will bring me no real happiness. I do not want beautiful women to adore me. I do not want followers, disciples, or fame. Nor do I want alleviation of misery or even liberation. I only want to serve you, my Lord, birth after birth after birth. God is a person. There are famous people speaking. And tens and thousands of people come to hear from them. And they may talk about morality. And they may talk about human virtues. And they may talk about various yoga procedures. And they may give so many various types of mantras. But they do not approach the Lord as a person. They do not worship the sanctity of the eternal relationship between the Lord and his devotees and the ecstasies of that love between the Lord and his devotees, which is the only singular subject matter of the spiritual world. In the Vaikuntha realm of absolute truth, there is only one reality, the eternal loving ecstasies of the devotee serving Krishna and Krishna serving his devotees. That love, that bhakti, is the only real truth. And it was that love between the Lord and his devotees that Bhishma Dev personally decided to meditate upon for the perfection of his life. And it appears in the Srimad Bhagavatam to teach all of us that this is the one and only perfection of life we should pursue, bhakti, eternal service. To worship the Lord, to worship the devotees, and to worship the love between the Lord and the devotees. And when we listen to the wonderful pastimes of Vrindavan Leela, or Dwarka Leela, or Narasingha, or Dhruva Maharaj Leela, we are not simply trying to get various moral, philosophical messages from that. They may be there, and they are invaluable. But the real purpose of hearing these wonderful pastimes is to understand the nectarine ocean of love between Krishna and his devotees and how it is eternal. And it is for that realization that we come before the deity and we chant his holy names. Bhishma Dev concluded by explaining how Krishna is like the shining sun. And he appears in different people's hearts according to their particular type of consciousness. But on this day he was appearing to Bhishma in his supreme, eternal, personal form because Bhishma was a devotee. Bhishma's eyes were fixed in seeing the beautiful form of the Lord. His mind was exclusive concentration on the pastimes of the Lord. And his lips were constantly chanting the holy glories and holy names of the Lord. And it was in this most auspicious of all conditions of consciousness that by his own free will, as the sun was entering the northern hemisphere, he gave up his life. Then Krishna and the Pandavas, everyone, with sad and happy hearts simultaneously, happy that he had achieved the perfection of life of going back to Vaikuntha, and sad in that they would not have the presence of the association of such a Mahajan. They bowed down before Bhishma and offered their respects. Meanwhile, the demigods in the heavens began to shower flowers and beat drums. His eternal servant. So on this auspicious evening that we have gathered together, let us very gratefully receive the great message that the Srimad Bhagavatam is giving us through this narration. In essence, it is that death can come at any moment. In fact, death will come at any moment. It is not a question of age. It is not a question of the condition of your health. In Kali Yuga, nothing is certain. Earthquakes, automobile crashes, planes can just come and crash into your house. Recently in America, in a very wealthy suburb, I think it was Pennsylvania, people were just sitting in their house watching TV, thinking how nice is life. And then all of a sudden, an airplane just somehow, something went wrong with the engine and crashed into these houses, and everyone was finished. People in the airplane were killed, the people in the houses were killed. Padam padam yadvi padam natesham. Kali Yuga, there's terrorists everywhere. So, whether we are little children, or old men or women, or youthful young ladies, or athletic young men, we should know death will come at any moment. So our life should be prepared. We should take very seriously the purpose and goal of life. And the various dualities that come before us, happiness, distress, success, failure, honor, dishonor, pleasure, pain, health, disease, all these things, we should just keep our body and soul best possible for our service to Krishna, but ultimately be grateful that every possible situation is meant to help me to detach myself from the illusions of this world and attach myself to Krishna. And Krishna has so kindly appeared by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. In the process of Krishna consciousness, by hearing his glories, by associating with his devotees, and especially by sincerely chanting his holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram. This is the age of Kali. The age where confusion, the destruction of faith, suspicion, not knowing what is true or what is not true, is prevalent. How to protect ourselves from these onslaughts coming from all directions? This is Kali's business, to keep us away from Krishna. And the only way he can do that is to disturb our faith, to confuse our commitments. And we are being attacked on all sides at all times, whether we know it or not. Sometimes it is very gross, sometimes it is very, very subtle. But what is subtle culminates in something very gross. Within and without, dissension is the key to Maya's victory. And we must protect ourselves from that. We should be very careful to help each other to maintain our faith, our humility, and our desire to serve, to help one another. The association of devotees is meant to be like a fortress, to protect ourselves so that we could go on throughout our lives, sincerely honoring our vows, worshipping the Lord by remembering him always and chanting his holy names. So tonight is Makara Sankranti. It is an auspicious time when everyone is giving each other sesame seed sweet balls.